Hello, everybody. This is Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols. We are doing another Tactical Fitness Report, and this was a fun one. This is actually going to be a new series that we're coming up with. Still the Tactical Fitness Report, but we are specifically talking about types of people who go on to BUDS or really any special ops selection program. But they bring things to the table and they have certain strengths and weaknesses. And we're going to break this up into, for instance, today's first one we're doing is the running athlete. You know, the cross-country runner in high school, maybe even college. And what are their strengths and weaknesses and what do they need to work on? What do they bring to the table? So I guess, we can go through a long list of what we think the running athlete brings to BUDS, but what would you say your first couple things are, Jeff?
Well, I think that I guess my disclaimer is that this is in really no particular order. We're just going to pick all demographics, and just we chose to pick the runner, I guess, just because it seems to be the most common sort of individual that tends to like migrate towards BUDS in other special forces selection, to the point of, well, one of the biggest things they bring is for the upside, and the biggest upside I think for runners is that they're really acclimated to being in their own head for long bouts of time.
Yes.
Like that's one thing with BUDS, is not that it's not a team environment, but you have got to get in, you have to be comfortable with your own uncomfortable headspace.
Yes.
And runners do a really good job at just being in the zone, for lack of a better term, and just go.
Right.
And that's very difficult for a lot of athletes to do because, right, even, you know, people in the gym, the resistance world, like they need loud music, they need interface, they need, not need, some prefer quiet. Right. I prefer quiet. But the majority of those individuals, like we're saying, the majority of runners, what we want to say is that constant stimulus of going to the gym and seeing other people and being like kind of on display. Runners aren't on display.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where BUDS too, you're not on, I mean, aside from the cadre and observation, you're not on display at BUDS. You got to deal with your own sort of nonsense, right? And you got to deal within your own head.
While you're in significant amount of pain typically, yep, or discomfort. You know, we, yep, can call it that. So I guess your number one thing that a runner brings to the table would say, we'll call this the mental toughness side, yep, of the equation. Because,
for sure,
yeah, I agree with you. I think the runner is very used to pushing himself in that high level of activity that typically hurts. And I would say this, I think, you know, from my experiences, you know, preparing people and going through it myself, is that you talk to yourself a lot while you're running. And if you have any, yeah, negative thoughts going in your mind while you're running, that's typically when they appear, because running sucks, you know,
yep,
if you're a non-running athlete. So once again, obviously running is this major strength that this guy brings to the table, and there won't be a timed run that a running athlete will fail, probably won't win. I mean, they're going to win everything, you know, yeah, pretty much. In fact, I've heard stories, there are guys running 4 mile timed runs in, you know, less than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, which is crazy.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll get to the kind of, there's two sides to that sword too, but what we're trying, I guess, at the end of the day, we're still trying to make you guys hybrid. Why don't you,
yes,
be a bit of a hybrid athlete?
Yeah.
We're just highlighting. So, and that's the thing too, is if you look at the duration of any evolution in BUDS, like where, you know, you're going to be at the obstacle course for 2 hours, but you're not going to be doing the obstacles for 2 hours. Like if memory serves me right, 7 minutes is a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Really good time. That's, and there's like only a handful of us that were able to do 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So the thing is that, hold on a minute. Mr. Fritz wants to get in the podcast. The thing is, you know, the swim, the 5 mile swim, and then the 4 mile runs, for you, you're in constant motion for that hour, that 40 minutes or that 29 minutes, whatever it is. And again, aside from some of the hell week, the long rows where you're rowing around the island and stuff, but on a regular basis, you're left to your own mind for those periods of time. And that's where runners are so good at. They've already been there so many times. So it's not foreign territory.
Yeah. And you know what? They're really good at handling negative feedback too, because they have a coach that is yelling at them and pushing them constantly, you know, and making them push harder, making them run harder, making them hurt more, you know, and get through that you know, anaerobic zone, because they get in such good conditioning that where a run for you and me would be anaerobic, I mean, they're way down here on the heart rate, and that takes a lot of pain.
Really. Yeah, and runners are always racing a clock, and that's what you're doing in Buds. You're racing a clock.
Yeah.
So not that there isn't, like, you know, in wrestling and other things, there's not time involved, but I'm just saying, like, we're always chasing that inanimate object, the time.
Right.
And runners have been doing that already. So that's kind of the big piece with runners, is the headspace is usually pretty good. As far as that endurance bout, now you start putting other stressors on them, it's kind of can change a little bit. But
oh, absolutely. And like I said, that's, you know, part of this, what we're doing here is we're talking about the strengths of what the runner brings to the table. Now we're going to talk about the weaknesses and where that runner will see a lot of pain and suffering at Buds or other selection programs, you know, and that big one is mainly strength. You know, the runner ability, you know, is going to be off the charts. However, with that running ability, often strength is the thing that gets neglected, because to be really good at running, you need to be light and you need to have a lower amount of muscle mass. You know, as we discussed, you know, earlier, that's just the way it is. Now, I will say this, you know, when we get a new guy that comes out here and he tells me he's a high school cross country runner, I can tell it just looking at him. He's a little skinny guy that's going to kick our butts running. I mean, it's even my best, you know, hybrid guys are going to get their butts kicked out there, and they're high competitors, you know, and they're trying to keep up with the cross country guy, which I love. Right. However, you know, the way we have our program set up out here, we have pull up bars every mile. Right. And for me, that pull up bar is a great break from running a mile, you know, as fast as I can. Right. However, for the cross country guy, it is downright torture, you know, to have to stop running, and now we get to do pull-ups. And that's when we break their soul, you know, under that pull-up bar, at least for the first month, you know. But I will say this, the transition from a running athlete to be able to transition into a hybrid, and this is all PT exercises right now we're discussing, but, you know, get into that muscle endurance required for high-rep PT stuff is really fast. I mean, a lot
faster.
In
comparison, yeah.
Yeah, a lot faster than, say, the strength athlete who needs to also lose 20 pounds. I mean, this guy's already light. Yeah. And so pound for pound, he doesn't have to do as much work, you know, to be really good at the calisthenics. And within 6 weeks, these cross-country guys that we were crushing under the pull-up bar are caught up with us, and they're still running fast.
Yeah, that's certainly the silver lining to being a dominant runner is – In 6 to weeks, the improvements that can be made in strength and strength endurance for a runner is a much bigger leap, much bigger improvement than someone that is a power lifter, football type big guy and trying to be aerobic.
Yes.
That's going to take far more than 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It's just the way that, because your body, if you're properly hydrated and you're training pretty good and you're properly eating to maintain that body mass, it's really difficult to lose body mass safely. Like it's like, well, no duh, but that's what you end up doing is when someone's 220 pounds and they've been 220 pounds, their caloric intake is sustaining 220 pounds. So their work volume has to be tremendous.
Yeah.
Well, the work volume that's already there for somebody that's 150 pounds, 130 pounds, their metabolism is so high already. They got to consume and consume and consume. And then you add a little bit of resistance to it. Their body adapts a little bit quicker because, and this is the other side for running, When you have a really good aerobic state, your bouts of recovery are much quicker. You don't, like for a big guy that goes, does runs and sprinting, if you do it, if you overreach too often, which is could be the first or second training session, you're going to set them back for 3 days or more.
Yeah.
Their nervous system is going to be like, whoa. But whereas a runner, you're actually not going to be able to put enough stress on that individual under the bar and resistance to get their nervous system freak out because they're just not strong enough yet.
Right. Right.
But what they do is they get tolerance for it much, much quicker. And then all of a sudden, 6 weeks later, they're doing 25 pull-ups.
Right.
And they put on 8 pounds.
Yeah.
And they haven't even slowed. Their running hasn't slowed at all.
No, not at all. In fact, I would say our latest two, we had like two or three guys head out to Buds recently that were all cross-country guys. One was a cross-country guy that was a professional, like, sponsored rock climber. I mean, that was a good combo.
Yeah, that's serious.
Oh, my God. I mean, he could run like the wind. He had great pulling ability, great grip. You know, so anyway, he was very light, though. He was about a buck 40 when he started. And then he just, when he finished, what do you call it, pre-buds out there at Great Lakes, he was 180.
Yeah.
Right? And still fast, you know. Now, he's not running 21-minute 4 miles anymore, but he's able to do it easily at 24.
Yeah.
You know, which is super fast. So fast at Buds. You know,
smoking fast.
So one of the strategies I think that the runners can take when they go to Buds is not try to kill themselves running a 20-minute 4 mile timed run just because you're used to running 5 minute mile pace in your previous life. You know, you drop that thing down to 6:15. You know, hit 25-minute 4 mile time runs, you're still going to beat 99% of the people in your class.
Yeah.
You know, and that's dialing back.
Yeah.
You know, for the runner. So that's if you had a strategy, I would do that, and then focus on what's going to be your weaknesses, which will be getting under that boat and getting under that log. However, you can mitigate some of those weaknesses by a strength training program, which maybe we should talk a little bit about that, like taking your we've gotten the runner to do really well now at calisthenics. So he's kind of made that nice little progression. And now we're going to go through a strength training cycle. What would you say some of the things that cross-country athlete needs to focus on?
Yeah, I think that the first thing is, and Stu already kind of touched on it, is that if you're running a 21-minute 3 mile, whatever it is, or less, four really, 21 at 4 mile.
Yeah.
You have got to understand there. It's like, I would put it like this. When you have a pistol in your hand and you're shooting at a target, everyone wants to hit that one little spot. But understand, if your shot group is a 3-inch or smaller, we'll just say it could be 5 inches. That's still a really good, I mean, really, in the terms of like what you're trying to shoot at, that is acceptable. That's beyond acceptable. Okay. Now, if you're doing like competitive Olympic style single arm off shooting, yeah, you want to be in a small area. But the thing is, running is the same way. You have got to be okay with going from a 21 minute to a 24 minute.
Yeah.
You've got to be, first of all, you've got to be okay with that. And so the way to be okay with that is know that that's still smoking fast when you're putting on 15, 20 pounds over the period of time, but everything else goes up. And so how do we get everything else to go up without really? And you're going to, there are going to be people that your run time won't get worse. It'll stay at 21 minutes or 21:30 or 22 even, really.
Yeah, with an extra 20, 25 pounds on.
Yep.
Yep.
So the biggest thing for runners that I look at is that they're really good vertical. They're really good. You know what I mean? But when they start getting hip angles that are deep, like lunges, they really get off balance because they've never been down there. Unless they've maybe done a lot of trail running or ran downhill quite a bit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just once, and that's where people say, I can't squat, I can't back squat, I can't. Well, they haven't exhibited deep hip flexion and ankle and knee flexion under resistance or velocity. And so that's what I do is I just do a lot of my runners. If I may not even back squat them for a while or front squat them really, or even just goblet squat them. I just do rear elevated split squats. Get deep because I'm kind of cheating. I'm raising that posterior leg. And I'm getting some good depth out of it.
Yeah.
That's the big thing is what we want to do is we want to challenge, for lack of a better term, the organism beyond what they've, what running has given them, right? It's the same thing with swimmers. They haven't had to deal with gravity. So just being under load is just for them. Running is terrible typically for them.
Yes.
So we got to look at what they've done, especially if someone that's really all they've done has been a runner. Like even like someone, that, let's say they ran cross country, they did lacrosse, and then they play, like they ran track, and then that's about it. Let's say they just really a lot of, and maybe played soccer too, right? And those are all very vertical sports. They didn't play baseball that where they're in a squat. They didn't play football where they're having to literally get themselves off the ground. Like it's a movement pattern. They didn't wrestle. I think I may have ever said, didn't say that yet. They haven't wrestled where they're in like all contorted. They haven't been doing jujitsu. Those are different planes of movement with deep hip flexion extension. We need to get that in that resistance environment, which is, you know, just lunges and body weight squats and all sorts of stuff we need to get in there.
Those are really good. One thing I've seen with my cross country guys when they're starting to lift, and you know, whether it's lunges with weight or squats with goblet squats, or even put a back squat on there and maybe just do very lightweight, less than 100 pound stuff, is knee caving.
Yeah.
Right. Their knees will buckle in like that. So what you just mentioned there with the single leg squats, the lunges, the elevated, almost like the Bulgarian split squat type stuff, really good to help build the, you know, the balance in the knee to prevent that knee caving. And then you can actually get them stronger. You know,
and on the same token, what I do is, like, one of my clients in Houston, he was a bodybuilder, 300 pounds. We got him down to 260 right now. I don't back squat him much. What I just have him do is walking barbell lunges.
Mm.
Like now we're in that lunge pattern, which we're still getting the work kind of the squat, but we're bilateral, and we're the walking lunge, the walking barbell lunge, forward and or backward, for me is the exercise I choose for my runners that need to get stronger and my really strong guys who need to run better.
Yeah. And have a little more leg stamina. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you go into like farmer's walks, and you go into pushing a sled, and then you go into those are probably two of my favorites.
You know what I like? Farmer walks up stairways.
Yes, or hills.
Yeah, or hills.
Exactly. And those are big ones. Because what we're saying, you guys are probably hearing an exercise. Stu and I are taking a look and see what's going on in the hip. Are we getting a deep hip bend, flexion, extension, which we're not getting in running unless we're doing sprint work out of a blocks?
Yeah.
Right? That's about – or if you're stealing a base. So that's why I was saying baseball. Not that you're not getting to full speed technically, like to finish a 3-mile, 4-mile, 5-mile run, but you're not.
Right.
Not in the same way with the same force production as someone that's sprinting fresh.
Yeah.
That's really it's hip flexion, knee extension, all those sort of things, ankle flexion extension under force through the ground. And you get that with the sled. You get that with walking lunges because we've increased the mass or we've changed the angle so we get a deeper hip flexion. Okay. Yep. So that's what we're looking at.
Yep. And actually those are quite specific exercises too that you're going to see. One of the hard things you will do at Bud's is with that log in a chest carry, forward walking lunges until the instructor gets tired. You know,
you do that like with a sandbag or like an old duffel bag full of like mulch and sand.
Yep.
Getting this big hook grip, right? Or getting a gable grip overhead and walk with it. Walk lunge, walk lunge, walk lunge. And you just drop it. Those sort of things, again, give a lot of value. And then the question is like, well, how often? Well, you're going to see if it's done correctly that your distance and duration can then increase. Just don't try to build Rome in one day, folks.
Right.
Ease into it, see how you respond, and go, huh, I did 3 bouts at 40 meters. Well, next time I'm going to do 4 bouts.
Right.
Maybe the next time I'm going to do 4 bouts at 50 meters.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a matter of, because specifically performance in the tactical population, as Stu and I have talked about, is it's accruing volume over time, lots of work over time. And if you bite off more work than you can chew early on, you just severely degrade your ability to get, and we talked before about those not missing training days.
Yeah.
We don't want to miss training days, unscheduled training days. Or I'm sorry, we don't want to miss scheduled training days because you're too tired. You're too overtrained. Now it can happen, but if you just go, you know, I got to grind. After a couple of weeks, you've just had a week and a half of bad training that ended up getting you in the chiropractor. Then you had to take a week off. So really you just had 2 weeks of crappy training, right? Or no training, same thing,
right,
at that point.
And with this athlete, he will respond really well to two cycles of periodized training, right? Yeah. The first cycle being like shorter runs, because he's probably used to running 70 miles a week, which you got to cut that way back.
Yeah.
Like maybe make it 25, 30 max for him, but make them faster. And, you know, start adding your calisthenics. So that's a cycle. Maybe add some dumbbell mixes in there just to kind of balance it out, and sandbags, things like that. But then doing a pure strength cycle for a 6 week cycle. And you can still, maybe instead of running that much, you start, you know, adding some weight to your, you know, make it a ruck progression, you know, during that weight training cycle, and just focus on strength and eat, you know, eat big. This is where guys, especially, like you said, you know, the cross country runners can really pick on some weight in that winter cycle. You know, one, they're not running, you know, 40 miles extra a week that they were once doing, you know, so they still eat like they normally do. And then they pick up 15, 20 pounds in a good cycle. So I think that builds them to a nice foundation of strength that they can now, you know, now let's start focusing on some Bud specific activities and see how they do.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I want to touch on is that, you know, I don't normally prescribe a whole lot of miles. There are certainly cases that I do, especially if someone needs to lose a lot of weight, but I'm not going to prescribe those miles right away.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a calendar time to do so. But also if someone is like, if they love to run, right, and they have been putting in 40 to 50 miles sometimes a week because that's what they love, and they've been doing it for a while probably, so they're not going to overtrain necessarily with that sort of mileage. But if we do scale them back, let's say we do scale them back to 20 miles, because most people, I wouldn't even right out of the gate program 20 miles.
No.
Not necessarily. But again, if someone that's been running 40 miles, you cut that volume in half to them, they're going to feel like they're not even running.
Yeah.
So again, that's what Stu and I was saying. Well, it depends. And that's why I can't take a program and just, not to name names or programs out there, to go, well, just you should be running X miles for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, even the shortfalls in my programming, as far as like, you know, the downloadable stuff, there's shortfalls in that, those programs, because sometimes they need to be customized to those extremes.
Absolutely.
Someone that runs a ton, like off camera, we were just talking about someone that I served with for years, and someone that Stu helped train was a world-class triathlete. His training has got to be different than your standard person when he went through Buds. He's still an absolute, like, where he's a world-class athlete still, you know, by all terms. And that's he hardly gets a train. But the point is also, like, what will you do is this, and then here's the beauty. If you have a well-structured program that Stu and I have, and they are, even though they may look a little bit different, they're well-structured. And when you go through them, basically that first program becomes a baseline.
Yes.
It's not raw. Hey, we're going to go, like, because people come to me and say, where should I start? I have my questions of how much do you weigh? How old are you? How long have you been doing it? And sometimes it's like, well, there's no perfect answer. Let's start here just so we have a starting point.
Yeah, and see how you do.
And after
then obviously you can personalize things like that. I mean, it's like these books behind me. I mean, these are not personalized programs. I mean, you're going to have to personalize some of these things.
But that's exactly once you get through the program that's established as a baseline, that's when the communication becomes really valuable. Because you're like, hey, Stu, I just went through your 12-week program, yada, yada, yada. Here's my numbers, but here. And then the Stu goes, yeah, you remember week 3 and 5 and 7 and whatever, and go, now tweak this and change this.
Right.
Now you go in and go, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then you just keep tweaking it.
Yep.
That's why we keep saying you have got to be a scholar of training and not just blindly follow it.
Right. Yep. Yeah, the last thing you want to do is, you know, especially if you're we'll keep the runner. You know, if you're a runner, the last thing you want to do is jump right into doing back squats and deadlifts out of nowhere. You know, so a strength progression. And like I said, I always tend to start my guys off anyway with a calisthenic foundation. And then we build on from there, start adding dumbbells, start adding kettlebells, start adding sandbags, and then really kind of get into the deadlift squat, you know, complexes and things like that. So I would say that's the biggest weakness for the runner is just pure strength.
Yep.
And where the runner at Bud's is going to be able to run like the wind, you know, there are a couple areas where he may have problems. One is under a boat and under a log, well, 1 and 2. And then 3, potentially, depending on his water comfort, you know, he may not be a good runner. You know, and swimmer. His leg, yes, I'm sorry, good swimmer. And his legs may not feel comfortable with a big set of fins on because he hasn't really worked those hips, you know, in a previous life to handle scissor kicks or dolphin kicks or whatever.
Because understand this, folks, when you are, as a runner, you're getting vertical loaded through the tibia, fibia, femur, spine. You're hitting the ground, right? Vertical loaded. When you put fins on, we're dorsiflexed, okay? Dorsum plantar flexed. That force is not going through linear through the tibia and fibia, okay? That is why you see so many shin splint issues at Bud's in conjunction with it's not that the running is too much because you have soft sand. Your tibialis anterior and your calf and gastroc, that's double negative, your gastroc and soleus, which is your calf muscles, they get so overworked because of the soft sand and the finning.
Yes.
And when those bones, I'm sorry, when the muscles get inflamed, those muscles start to provide less and less structural support for the tibia and fibia. Then the ground force becomes a problem, especially because, you know, the Bud shuffle and all those sort of things where it's on concrete and all these sort of, it's the perfect storm. If you were to eliminate the swimming, there'd be less shin splints probably, but it's the combination. And that's where we say, okay, because we're still trying to produce force. And for somebody that has trying to produce force, because runners, now you're getting extension, toe drive down, glute contraction, we get to extension, right? But with the toe down in a plantar flexion position, we're hitting water with a fin. So when you hit the ground running, you go and your calf can take that position. Your calf takes that stress when you go into flexion. Yep. With the fin, it's opposite. You get on the front side of the shin.
Yeah.
So that's a big reason why we say runners have great calf, great calf position, pretty good ankle mobility. But when you stress out that tibialis anterior, the front side of the shin, that muscle on the outside front side where that big ball is, that's where your shin splint. That's what happens because the finning just really pisses it off.
Yeah. And I'm going to say this, you know, during my transition out of powerlifting football phase, you know, the one thing I was not really good at doing for very long distances was running. So I swam more, and I swam a lot with fins. And let me tell you, that was very helpful.
Yeah.
You know, doing a lot of swimming with fins a year prior to going to Bud's, because when I went out to those swims, it was like, oh, this is awesome. You know, no one's yelling at me. You know, I'm in front of the class. Yeah. You know, and it's not a painful event. Like, there were a lot of people that weren't used to swimming with fins, and like they could barely walk when they got out of that cold water. One, their muscles kind of get stiff. And then two, it's just, you know, that constant stretching of that front side of the ankle. It does hurt. I mean, it hurts pretty good.
Yeah. And that's kind of like we'll get into this next time about the bigger body types is that, you know, when you get a big, strong guy, typically their ankle mobility isn't nearly as good as a light runner. for various reasons, because structurally it's trying to support more mass.
Right.
But then you put a fin on that individual, the same problems happen. You really start forcing more ankle mobility. And you, that's why I see, even like for me, I'm wondering if, when I started doing my long swims in like in the duck feet, I'd get out of the water and be like, oh, my, it took me a minute to get my land legs back, because of like, that's a new sort of pump I'd never experienced.
Yes.
My glutes and hamstrings and everything were fine. It's just my ankles were like, oh, that's especially as, you know, what helped me probably, because I was a catcher in college.
Same.
My ankles had pretty decent mobility, even though I lifted heavier weights at the time. But again, it's what I guess in my summary for all this, is that we are a byproduct of what we've been exposed to. Buds is going to expose you to everything.
Yes.
And if we are not prepared to manage all that exposure of strength, power, endurance, strength, endurance, the list goes on and on of sort of physiological demands. We want you guys to be hybrid. We want you guys to be kind of like a decathlete, if you will, if you want to kind of pigeonhole an athlete to be a certain type. We're just trying to highlight the idea that this is, it's a thinking man's game too. We want you to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really good. I would say this, you know, for the running athlete, some more intangible skills they're bringing to the table. And this can be, you know, it kind of depends, once again. Let's talk about the teamwork factor, you know, for the running athlete. You know, a running athlete is typically an individual who runs a lot, right? Now, there may be a running team. There may be some teamwork involved at a cross-country meet, you know, but it's typically an individual sport. You know, he may be better off being that individual, but when put into a group, you know, there's obviously some teamwork background that he may have. He just may not be the best team player compared to somebody who, you know, is on a football team or a lacrosse team, you know, who really has to work together, you know, to move a ball down the field, you know, as a group. Yeah. Just an observation on an intangible that I think that a lot of people tend to not look at as a skill set that you need to have out there, because you really don't make it through Buds by yourself. You know, you make it through with your boat crew.
Yep.
And you know, you help each other out, and you get through it together.
Yeah. I'll say I'm actually have homework assignment for myself, because I'm going to look this up, and I'm actually going to call some close friends of mine that are wrestlers at the University of Iowa and places. Cause I'm just super intrigued. I read this really good book called Quiet. It's really, because it may not seem like it, folks, but I'm a pretty severe introvert. You see me talking, and I guess I'm articulate and those sort of things. I'm very concise in what I think and say, but I don't spend a lot of time in the public eye at all. And I've always been like that. I don't have a lot of friends. I'm not poor Jeff, but I don't surround myself with a lot of people. I surround myself with really close people. My point is this, is that runners tend to be very introverted, I would guess. Now, you're going to get it across the board. Like football players, I would say that offensive linemen tend to be a little more introverted. Okay, yeah. But it's the nature of that sport. Maybe, because to Sue's point, I guess, is that, like, let's say you have ever had a runner. You've been a runner your whole life because you love the sport. That setting of quiet and being in your own headspace. Now you're under a log with five other dudes, and they're yelling at you, going, "Get the fucking log up." Like, and then you realize, like, well, this is why I never did team sports, because I hate being, you know what I mean? So just knowing who you are as an individual, but knowing what you're going to have to encounter in Buds is equally as important. And so I look at runners and going, hey, it's not just about the physical. We talked about the headspace. We talked about the mental drive. We know that it's there. Sometimes that stressor of like, holy shit, this is chaos. And you may not even consciously observe it, but subconsciously you're like, your brain's going, this is too much data to intake. Holy crap, I got 150 people on the beach. I got logs everywhere. I got bullhorns. It's raining. I'm uncomfortable. And it just starts piling up. Just know that that's going to come. That's a big thing, is like stress inoculation. And again, I mentioned the book Quiet. It specifically talks about introverts in performance.
That's really cool, because if you think
– fantastic book.
That's a great point, because, you know, part of Buds is being able to dissociate to a degree.
Yeah.
Right, and go to that happy place.
And introverts do it really well.
Introverts do it very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say that, you know, that's the crazy – because here's the really weird thing is that I were to if I were to make a guess, I would say the majority of SEALs are introverted. Not because we can be a chameleon. You can put, like, shit, I was in front of a couple thousand people at a TED talk. And I've been in public. I'm fine with it.
Right.
But like, I need to go inside my own house away from people to kind of recharge.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes
and
sense.
That's how
you're either charged by people or you're charged by being by yourself.
That's, exactly. And that's I get
the
recharged.
Definition of, yeah.
Exactly. And so it's really cool to start thinking about yourself like that, because there is this I've heard it before. There is this idea that SEALs are this really flamboyant. Da, da, da. There are some, but the vast majority of our population are quiet guys that just want to spend time with friends and family and don't get out much, you know? And that's just the way that, you know, like Einstein and Newton and, they're saying actually the only president that has been clinically an introvert was Nixon, I'd heard.
Oh, wow.
But the book just lays all these people out in the why. Basically, Harvard Business and Harvard Psychology teamed up to do this book.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a pretty easy read. But anyways, I can't get off. But my point is, I guess, is this, guys, is understand who you are and that it's not a bad thing to be a runner or an introvert.
No.
But how do you take who you are and mold it into that setting? Be okay with it. I guess that's my point.
Now, I think that's a great way to kind of sum this up, because that's really what you're trying to do. You're trying to take your athletic history and your person, right, and turn that into a good bud student.
Yes.
And the equation is not always the same, right? The answer is –
yes.
But how you get to that answer isn't always the same, because, you know, there are some groups that have a greater ability to go into that zone, into that being that mental toughness phase. There are some groups that are just naturally stronger. You know, there's some groups that are just have a higher anaerobic and aerobic capacity. They're better, you know, endurance athletes. You know, there's groups that have higher muscle stamina and great teamworks and able to handle negative feedback. You know, so those are the type of things that, you know, you as a person have to absorb now, you know, to build yourself into being good at all of those.
Yep.
Because you can't, I mean, we're all going to have a weakness when we go to Buds, and Buds is going to somewhat expose that. But if you spend a significant amount of time focusing on that weakness and making it less of a weakness and maybe even a borderline strength, you're in the zone. You're ready. So there. So we good with the running athlete?
I think we've covered that to the best that we probably can without just reiterating some of the points we've already made.
Right. So next one. What do you want to try to do on the next one? We'll say the swimming athlete.
Yeah, we'll probably do swimming athlete, and then maybe we'll call it the strength athlete.
Yep.
After that, but we'll just kind of highlight again the strengths and weaknesses of them.
Yeah.
Weaknesses of them.
Yeah.
And just you understand that weaknesses are because we've allowed them to be, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because if given the right timeline, that's why Stu and I would say, hey, give yourself a year.
Yeah.
We pretty much can take any extreme of endurance athlete and extreme strength athlete in a period of a year and get them ready for it.
Yeah,
I really believe that.
To a degree, someone who's been fairly sedentary.
Yes,
you know, a year is life changing.
It's a lot of time. It
yeah.
really, if especially if we train appropriately, and we don't miss scheduled training programs due to overtraining, injury, or illness.
Yep.
So yeah, we'll do it again very soon. Maybe we'll tomorrow probably maybe to do the next one.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right, Jeff, thanks so much.
Anytime. Take care.
We'll see you.